This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to the Memorial Day program. This program has been pre-recorded, so please do not call in. Our guests today are Greater Lansing Sports Magazine editor Jack Ebling and Lansing State Journal reporter Joe Rexroad, who discuss Michigan State football. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming in and wanted to look back at the spring game. What did we learn from the spring game, if any, about this year's football team?
I don't know what you ever really learned from a spring game. You have guys who are injured. You've got split squads, people who know the plays. So I don't think you ever get a real reading from the spring game. But a few people stood out a little bit. I thought Deion Sims looked like he was in shape and made some plays. He's going to have to make some plays. And Johnny Adams looks like he's primed for a big year. I thought it was very interesting, Joe, that they used him on offense a little bit.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So there were some things you learned, but I don't know that you can really make a judgment when you've got Connor Cook as your quarterback going both ways.
Yeah.
I was told there would be no discussion of the spring game, Earl.
So that's the first question.
I agree on Dan Sims. Of course, a year ago, if you guys remember, and again, I mean, to think back to past spring games is really sick, but he was awesome in that spring game, too. Yeah. He and Tony Lippitt. And then, of course, you know, the wrist injury and I believe some weight gain, it appeared. Some weight gain really limited him some last year, too. He does need to, I think, drop a few pounds. But, boy, again, there's another guy I look at and say, you know, this kid could play in the NFL someday if he puts it together. And you're right. It's too bad for the fans and for all of us that we didn't get to see Andrew Maxwell in this game. That's what I was most looking forward to, seeing Andrew Maxwell, seeing if he has any chemistry with anyone. I did like Andre Sims Jr. in the game. He looks quick, compact, little slot receiver, catches the ball. And I think, you know, the fact that he was picked first by his teammates and then the way he played, I mean, I think he's going to be a factor this fall.
I have a theory. I run it by you guys. I wrote this a couple weeks ago for 24/7 Sports. I think this team is going to be as good or as mediocre as Andrew Maxwell. And I cannot remember a single Michigan State player who has been more critical to the team's success going back 30 years. The defense is as good as it's been, Joe. We've talked about that. A lot of the other pieces are in place with four starting offensive linemen back. Le'Veon Bell could be one of the best backs in the country. But if Andrew Maxwell can't play, if he can't hit open receivers, if he can't make the right reads, they're going to be facing 8 and 9 in the box, and they're going to be playing a lot of 17-12 games, 17, 13, 14 games.
Well, you know, I think you're right. I also wonder why couldn't Andrew Maxwell beat Craig Krenzel of this year?
He could.
Just sort of, they, you know, play trestle ball and win a bunch of those 17, 12 games. Mm-hmm. But no question. I mean, you look back at last year's team, they leaned so heavily on Kirk Cousins to get him into the right stuff, to make big plays on 3rd and 8, and his receivers. They leaned so heavily on B.J. Cunningham to make those plays. Keyshawn Martin made some – I mean, like, think of the Michigan game, those two touchdowns he had. I think, you know, he got caught him before the sticks and made the – you know, got in – I mean, those guys are going to be so missed, and it's such a different team because of that. And so they're going to have to lean heavily on that running game. They're going to have – that's going to have to be better. But, you're right, they – if they can't come close at least to, you know, or at least have a decent passing game, then it's going to be tough.
Coming out of high school, we know this was a long time ago, Kirk Cousins, basically unheard of, you know, two-star guy, and Andrew Maxwell was an Elite 11 quarterback. In terms of preparation, now here's a guy who's had 3 years. Cousins had two. Cousins did have a chance to play a couple key moments in the bowl game and against Ohio State. But you'd have to think that Maxwell is as prepared as Cousins was in 2009. Now, can he get it done? Does he have a B.J. Cunningham to make spectacular catches? That's what we're going to find out.
Yeah, Joe, do we need to know more about the audible system? Can Maxwell audibleize? I mean, that's something we'll have to wait because, you know, Kirk Cousins really picked up the system. Added his own plays sometime. He could auto. The coaches had so much faith in him doing the audibles. Probably don't have that in Maxwell.
Although I would say that's one area, you know, we can't know how he'll do, you know, when the guys are rushing him and, you know, he's got a small window to fit a ball in and it's, you know, third and long in a key game, you know, on the field. But I think that's one area where, again, you can't be any more prepared than he has been for not playing, right? I mean, he's been in that meeting room. I think he obviously knows the offense. I mean, he's going to be a fourth year junior next year, and he seems smart. I mean, he even said this spring that, you know, now he gets to go into Roshar's office and say, hey, what about this and this? So he's involved. I think of new starting quarterbacks, I think he'd be further along than a lot of guys would be in that mm-hmm. way. And a lot of times it's a check into one thing out of one other thing. So, but at the same time, I'm sure, and a lot of things we don't know, on a snap-by-snap basis, Kirk Cousins saw some things you know, you can't just do like that.
He got him out of some bad plays.
Yeah.
If you look at the intelligence, if you look at the leadership, it seems to be there. Watching him very carefully in the spring while he was healthy, it seemed like he was taking control of the team. And Joe, I did just about bribe some of the former guys when we were doing Heart of a Spartan to give me an honest evaluation of Andrew Maxwell. And to a player, I'm talking about Cousins, Cunningham, Keyshawn Martin, they all said, don't worry about that guy. He's going to be fine. Well, we'll see. But they're sold, and it wasn't just lip service.
Yeah, and I'm sure he will be fine, but Kirk Cousins was more than fine, and that's the thing. It's such a tough guy to follow, especially in that way, in the locker room. I mean, Kirk Cousins is driving teammates all over the state, you know, and if someone has a funeral, I mean, yeah, unbelievable stuff. You talk to people about him, and it's just story after story about he's not just a guy who's leading a team. He's more than that. For 3 years, he's a captain. So I think Andrew Maxwell understands that, though. I think he understands, you know, you can't try to be Kirk Cousins. He is his own person. But Maxwell did seem to me to be comfortable assuming this role, and maybe he wouldn't have been until now. I'm sure he wanted to play before now. But I think, again, he's been as prepared as you can be for this moment.
Well, Earl, do you feel better with Andrew Maxwell taking over in 2012 than you did when Kirk Cousins was succeeding Brian Hoyer in 2009? I mean, you've got to think that Maxwell is ready for this challenge. He's been waiting 3 years for this opportunity.
That's true. Yeah, I think he should be ready. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, do we have any other concerns about this team, or what other concerns would have you both raise red flags for both of you if you have any other concerns?
Joe, what do you think of the offensive line? They got four guys back. Is that good or bad?
I think it's good. I mean, I think that they, you know, you look at the numbers and they weren't great last year, but I thought they were so much better at the end of the year than they were at the beginning. They were pretty bad.
They were
Notre
very
Dame.
Good at pass blocking. I thought the pass protection was outstanding.
I agree.
Run blocking wasn't there. And maybe some of that was due to the backs. I don't know that Edwin Baker always hit the hole when I was there. So we'll see how that goes. But you have to think, and this is what we come back to. Earl and I every year try to pick which games are going to win and which games are going to lose. And we never get it right because there are always injuries. You can't predict in May what's going to happen in November. But they have seven offensive linemen that I think you'd feel pretty comfortable in starting. And there have been a lot of years when they've had three.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think they, hey, for example, you look at the Big Ten Championship game. You know, I don't think Wisconsin had the greatest defense, but I thought they ran the ball pretty well in that game. They didn't do much against Georgia, but you know, I think that they have the potential to be a much better running team. They're going to have to be, and I agree with you. I mean, I think they have probably as much talent on offensive line as I can remember. Like you said, that many guys you feel good about. And I think some guys who can play in the NFL someday too. And there have been a lot of years where how many NFL linemen did Michigan State have starting? You know, none. One.
Yeah.
You know.
How about DeAnthony Arnett becoming eligible a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't have too many candidates at that position. I know he didn't do a lot in the spring, but he looks to me like, you know, perfect slot receiver, 5'11", 170 pounds, quick feet, speed, hands. I think when he figures out the offense, and you know, maybe this is probably it was probably a tough spring for him. He's new, you know, he's new to a different school, he's new to this offense, and he's worrying about his dad, not sure if he's going to play. So I think it'll end up paying off for them next year.
We have a tendency to make a snap judgment on people, and then that stays with them all along. And you have expectations. You think, well, this guy was great in high school, he's going to be great in college. Well, maybe he will be eventually. But look at the guys when they start out their first year. They're not what they are when they're seniors.
Right.
I mean, B.J. Cunningham wasn't. Mark Dell wasn't. Keyshawn Martin as a receiver wasn't. You know, it takes some time. It's a process. So is DeAnthony Arnett going to be the same next year that he will be in 2014? No. But is he going to be good enough? That's the question.
And everybody, you know, I've had this discussion with some people like, you know, and I claim they have a lot of talent at receiver.
Yeah.
I think they have the talent you need.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone's like, well, yeah, we'll see about that. But, well, we may not see about that because, like you said, Cunningham's a perfect example. You know, you knew he was talented, but he's dropping the ball as a freshman. I mean, you know, he wasn't a polished receiver. You could tell he would be good. And if they don't have some people who step up and really take command of that position, that, to me, is still – my biggest question about this team is that position. Now, I think Benny Fowler is a guy who I think could be a really good number one receiver in this league, but we have to find out about the feet. Can he stay healthy?
Right. And you go back to the first year, back when Gene Washington played, he didn't play a first year.
Right.
But Kirk Gibson, his first year, ran the wrong routes. Charlie Baggett was throwing interceptions because Gibson wasn't going the right place. Andre Risen, his first year, caught 9 balls. Of course, George,
which is the 11 passes thrown that year,
pretty high percentage. But you know, with all these guys, I agree with Joe. I think there's talent there. They got 8 guys. They don't need 8 guys, but they need 3 or 4. And do they have 3 or 4 that are going to take that next step? I would love to have seen Benny Fowler have a spring to play with Andrew Maxwell.
Yeah, I think so. Now here's a question for you guys: Donald Spencer, let's say he had not transferred, would he be a key guy, or would he have been passed over? I mean, I thought he looked pretty good in drills, and people forget about that guy. And there's going to be a couple guys out of this group, too, who end up going somewhere else, probably.
Right.
This is how it goes nowadays.
You know, I think it would be interesting if we sat here and tried to figure out 2 years from now. Let's talk about the 2014 season for a second. If we were to pick Michigan State's top 2 receivers, I don't know that we could do it. We don't even know if Aaron Burbridge is going to be in school. But what's going to happen with Tony Lippett? I mean, it wouldn't shock me. It's going to sound silly, as usual. But it wouldn't shock me if Matt Maxud was in the playing group in 2 years. So they've got a lot of guys. And who winds up on the field and how they gel and mesh and get the timing down. That's why I think this summer is so important.
Yeah.
Because Maxwell has got to do basically what Cousins did and take this team and run it during the summer.
Yeah. Now, I know we've got a ton of guys, you know, 8 starters coming back on defense. But are there any concerns for the defense, or are both of you really comfortable with how this defense is formulating and should be? We believe it's going to be a pretty strong defense.
Well, I mean, I have 2 concerns, and it's defensive tackling and free safety. I mean, you don't know. You just don't know. I mean, Trent Robinson, I feel, was a little bit underrated as a leader. I think he was a guy that all the guys liked. He was vocal. He communicated. He was a good player. At tackle, not just Darrell Worthy, Kevin Pickleman was a good player last year. I mean, Kevin Pickleman made a lot of plays for this team. Darrell Worthy, and I understand the knock on Worthy, and you heard it from – well, you certainly heard it from John Gruden the night he was drafted. But let's not forget he went in the second round still, okay? Yes, you know, he would be taking out some plays and maybe he'd take some off or he wouldn't be a factor. He'd make a handful of plays every single game. That could change the game, and I just don't know if anyone on this team can do that.
William Golston can do it.
Well, there you go. And that's the thing. It's like Golston becoming a monster at his position may be how you really compensate for Worthy's loss, not someone at the tackle position.
I don't have any concerns about the defense. I look at it, and I've been trying to find warts. And I think you have to go back to heading into the 66 season. That year they had lost Don Jappinga at the corner and Harold Lucas, Ron Goover.
They lose their – yeah, I was going to say Goover too. So
they lost 3 guys, one at each level. But otherwise, they had everybody back, and they had depth. And that's exactly what this team has. I don't remember a pair of cornerbacks like Johnny Adams and Darquez Denard. Yeah. I don't remember this much depth. The linebacker, they got nine guys who could have started for a lot of Georgia's best teams. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And so I think this is going to be a very, very difficult team to scheme against. I think there's a lot of experience there. They can get after the quarterback. How do you beat Michigan State's defense? Well, first of all, maybe you turn over the offense. That might be the best way to do it. And I think Michigan State early in the year might be susceptible to some of that. But I think this defense is going to be solid all year long.
Couple guys, you know, who don't get talked about as much. I think Marcus Rush, you know, everyone talks about Golden. Yeah. Marcus Rush looks better to me, too. Bigger. Mm-hmm. And, boy, he's a good player if he stays healthy. And, you know, Chris Norman is a really good player, I think. I think he could be really good as a senior. He, you know, the shoulder bothered him all year last year. Mm-hmm. And I think he's also a guy. He seems to me like one of those natural leader guys, along with Bulla. I think Norman and Bulla are two guys who can lead this team. Isaiah Lewis, I think, is going to be a pro. I really do. But I still say, you know, he's got to have someone good back there with him. And that is, yeah, but you're right. When they have depth, you would think that they would be able to, through this competition with a lot of talented players, you know, find guys for that.
Yeah, I look at those three new positions, the two defensive tackle spots and the free safety. And remember, they got Tyler Hoover, who was a pretty good end coming into the middle, you know, trying to throw over that. You know, Marcus Rush said, I don't know what you do. Maybe you throw Hail Marys over the middle. I don't. How do you get it over those 6-7 guys? But I think he's going to be a pretty good player. He had some very good games. A lot of people thought that he was underachiever, maybe what he should have been. I thought he was a good defensive end, and he can be a good tackle once he learns to get his pad level down.
Yeah.
And I think they have enough guys who can play the other spot. Rashad White's going to be good enough in there. They've got some other guys, and I think they've got candidates at free safety. You know, is Drummond going to be the guy? Maybe not. Maybe Williamson is. Don't forget about Demetrius Cox.
Absolutely.
Everyone's talking about him coming in and making an immediate impact. So they've got guys.
Well, we've discussed this, I mean, with Junior Seau passing away, and we know at high school level they do a lot about concussions. Is there enough being done at the college level to interact or stop or prevent concussions?
What else would you do?
I don't know, maybe check them more, check them better or more than that you see them doing now.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say for sure, but it sure looks to me from the outside like they're pretty cautious. I mean, look at Larry Caper, takes a little hit and they just, you're out, you're done. I think that there's a lot of concern about that at every level right now. So I tell you, it is scary. And when you look at the effects that these concussions have had on some of these guys, I mean, I tell you, it makes me think twice. It really does with mm-hmm. my kids about, are they going
to
play football?
What are you going to say?
Yeah. I mean, my wife already is saying no. So it's going to have to be, do I want to battle that? You know, I mean, to me, I think football is such a great thing for, in so many ways, but, boy, it is scary. And, you know, can they do anything more with the equipment? I mean, they have helmets this big, you know, I don't think you can totally, because it's a snap thing, right, with a concussion.
Well, I have
I'm no doctor, but.
You know, Earl, people laugh when I say this. I always think that the problem with head injuries is a face mask. It's become armor now.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're never going to go back to just the padded helmets, you know, that we saw 35 years ago. But I think that when you got this cage on the front, people felt invincible, and they would use their head fearlessly. And you watch the films of the guys in the 50s and 60s, and they still played football, and they played good football, and they had a single double bar. Sometimes a lineman would have a bar coming down the front, but they didn't use their head to lead the same way.
Yeah,
that's a good point. And I've heard some people say, hey, get rid of helmets, period. And then, you know, you can still tackle people, but you'll be none of that head stuff. You just get rid of it.
Right.
Yeah. Like rugby.
Nobody wants their face mashed in, none of these guys. They got to look good after the game, so they don't want a bloody nose and a big cut over their eye.
Well, you know, Jack, when we were younger, the first thing, and I think you still hear this today, Joe, is that, you know, coaches will always say, you got to learn to play hurt. I mean, this is a game.
Toughness, right?
Yeah, you come into it, even in your first, you can't sit out with injury because of the competition. You know, somebody's going to steal your job or get your job. So you have to learn how to play hurt in this game.
Well, no question. Coaches, you know, you hear every spring, you hear Mark D'Antonio say every spring, you know, guys have got to get those 15 practices in.
Yep.
And, you know, of course, they're not going to take chances with most injuries. But I think with the head injury stuff now, it's okay. Just get out of there.
Right.
With other stuff, yeah, they want them to, you know, you got to play through some little ankle tweak or whatever it is, a little shoulder tweak. But, yeah, I sense a big change in the approach to the head stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I do think that it's going to be an issue for a lot of people now as their kids start to get football age. But I think that there will be some changes. The game will be made as safe as it can be. It's never going to be as safe as some moms would want it.
Yeah.
But it's not boxing either. I mean, I think, you know, you go out there and there are precautions, the medical staff around. Even most high schools now have trainers, qualified trainers, or a doctor around, certainly for games. And so I think that they're going to make the sport a little bit safer and education. I remember when I was coaching back in the 70s, and, you know, we didn't even understand about water.
Yeah.
Shows how far back it's come. I mean, you know, the idea was deprivation. And, you know, I think of some of the things we did as I look back on my coaching books and can't believe we did that.
I mean, I went to high school in Virginia. I mean, that's the late 1980s, deprive us of water, absolutely, you know? And that was just how everyone did it, in 100-degree heat. But, you know, luckily, we've moved past some of that stuff because that is dangerous.
You know, hockey's a dangerous sport.
Yeah.
So you'll get hit in the head in baseball. I mean, there are a lot of ways now. Obviously, football, there are more collisions than there are in most sports. But if you don't know what you're doing, if you're not careful, if you don't have the right supervision and leadership, you can get hurt doing anything.
Yes. Now, what about then? Is the universities doing enough to help players that get injured in football? Because we know a lot of these guys have after they were hurt in college and they don't play in the pros or anything, they're still lingering injuries. I mean, I've known guys for 20 or 30 years, and they still are bothered by some of the hits, some of the things that happened to them while they're playing in college. So should colleges be more mindful? Should they do more to help kids or guys with injuries once they've left here after 4 years? Because, as you know, many of the guys play hurt. And they don't really fess up to what their injuries are. I know people will say, well, that's their fault. They should fess up. But we know guys love to be macho.
Well, they might leave and people still don't know what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
Might not be till 20 years that they know what's wrong with them. But, Earl, you know, you can have Jeff Monroe or Sally Nogle or Randy Pearson, some of those people on your show, and then you can answer that question a lot better than Joe or I could answer it for you. It seems like they're doing a lot.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, after guys leave, I wonder if you even open up the door of trying to follow up or whatever, if that's a legal issue. I mean, certainly a financial issue, but you know, I don't know. I don't know that I can say universities should be doing more.
Do you know a former player is here? Can you identify any former players who had head trauma?
Well, not head trauma, but had other injuries. Still have problems with their legs.
Knees?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's football. I mean, my son is in China, and, you know, he had a horrific knee injury playing college football, ankle injury, and came back from it. And now he seems to be okay, but certain times he still feels it. And I think if you play for a sustained period of time, you know, you're going to have something that you're going to feel. There's going to be some residual effect.
I mean, football is, you know, I mean, it really is an incredibly violent and damaging sport.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and I know we all love football and like it. That's why we're still here. We still enjoy the game. But, you know, I just wonder, is enough being done? I mean, especially after the Junior Seau death, and I think, basically, what about all those guys who are just, you know, the scrubs, the guys who are just getting the team ready for games? How much have they been affected? We never hear about those guys.
Well, put yourself in the position of a head coach. Let's say you're Mark D'Antonio for a minute. You'd change paychecks with them. I know you would.
Definitely.
Okay. What would you do differently? You're out there. You see what goes on at Michigan State football practice. You're around them on game day. What would you do differently?
I don't know if we could do much. I mean, we really don't get to see that much. But if guys are telling them about some of the injuries, I think maybe they should have to hold them out even longer than what they do, other than for a practice or two. Because they basically tell you, you got to play hurt.
But I think a lot of guys, too, and Joe brought this up, they don't tell them because they want to play.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there. They want to play. They get 12 opportunities or 13 opportunities a year. They don't want to be held out. And if they get held out of practice, somebody's going to pass them by.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't let the trainers know what's going on all the time.
You mentioned, you know, the medical staff here, and they've been around here for a long time. Mm. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are times where there are conflicts. You know, I think in any sport with the coach and the medical staff on, okay, well, you know, we need to get this guy back. But I just feel like – I really feel they've got a really strong staff. And I don't get the sense that a lot of guys are rushed back when they shouldn't be. I mean, I know what you're saying. I'm sure, you know, another day or two would help a lot, but – you know, I feel like they at least have a very experienced staff, you know, people who can kind of see what's going on and have a good gauge on what's really going on with these guys. I mean, I think that's the best you can do.
What percent of players do you think in October and November are 100% healthy?
None.
Maybe 5%.
Yeah. So what happens with most responsible programs, I think Michigan State is one of these, and Michigan State basketball also does this, is they get a trainer's report every morning. And they look at it, and the doctors and trainers have first say. They say, this guy's out. This guy's out. It isn't a matter of the coach saying, well, wait a minute now. When the doctors and trainers say the guy's out, he's out. Now, the ones
there may
who
be now, can he come back in 2 days?
Yeah,
how
I mean,
many
how
days
long
is
he out? You
yeah,
know, yeah. But every morning there's an assessment made. Now, the ones who aren't on that list, who are eligible to practice, you know, maybe they got a muscle situation or they've got something and maybe they're 80%. Well, now they're going to find out if they can be 85% or 90%. But the ones who really shouldn't be playing, I don't think they're playing.
You're listening to Michigan State University Radio. We have Joe Rexroth from the Lansing State Journal, and we have Jack Ebling with us from the Greater Lansing Sport Magazine. And we're talking football today and talking about some of the injuries, talking about Michigan State and how we're dealing with injuries. It does seem like we're doing better at all levels, but sometimes I know we hear about it at the pro level. We hear about it at the college level. We don't probably hear that much about it at the college level. I mean, we hear about the high school stuff, and we hear a lot about the pro stuff. But how much, you know, is there a lot of research out there at the college level?
Research on injuries?
Yeah, on injuries or on concussions. I mean,
I think most of your research is being done at the college level. I think because you have academicians there, and you have so many people who, you know, they've got a sample study that they can use there. I mean, try to do research on an NFL team. You're liable, lucky if you can get into practice. I think that there's more research being done right now on football injuries at the college level than there is at the other two.
Well, what about, you know, we've talked about, you know, about participating in, like Joe, you said about, you know, it just makes you wonder, should you let your kids participate in this game, a game that we love? And you do, Jack. I mean, I think all the kids today have to really take a hard look at football because it is such a game that's a violent game and everyone is susceptible to some type of injury.
Well, you know, I'm a football guy. I was a football coach. I believe in it. I wanted my son to play it. I'm glad he played it, even though there was a period of time where, you know, I had to live with my wife and answer these kinds of questions. But I think that football is the best game there is. It's the greatest game. It teaches you incredible lessons. So I think that if you have the proper leadership, you have the proper precautions, medical training, the odds are definitely in your favor. You know, you can get hurt walking across the street. You can step off the curb and get hurt, too. And that's not saying that your odds of an injury in football aren't greater, but Hamisi in school, you let him play football?
Yep.
Yeah? I mean, you can say, well, no, you can't play football, but you can play soccer. Do we know about head trauma in soccer from heading the ball?
That's so funny you said that. I was waiting with that because my uncle, who's also a football guy, was like, "Yeah, now just tell Katie, you know, if you want to, if soccer's the alternative, the big secret that no one talks about is all the concussions that come out of soccer, heading the ball and stuff like that." So, like you said, I mean, you can get hurt in a lot of different ways. I'm a basketball guy myself. I feel like that's maybe a little safer way to go, but it's a different season. I mean, it's tough. And I also think that, you know, for young kids, I don't think it really gets heavy duty until you get to maybe JV level. I mean, you know, these little kids, they're not human missiles yet, you know.
Yeah.
You get a little older, and then maybe it becomes a little bit more of a question, and you really have to think about it. But I'm with you. I think the benefits still far outweigh the risks. These NFL guys, we're talking, you know, incredible speed, power, technique, and like you said, guys actually using poor technique, to deliver a blow. It's hard to compare. I even think that level to college to an extent. The pro guys are that much bigger, faster, and just vicious.
You stood down on the sidelines at Ford Field at the end of a game. If you see those guys, you go, wow. I mean, you can watch even a college game where we are at the end of the game, and we know people like that. Not all of them. There are always some specimens you see, and you say, you know, that one's a little bit different. But you go and stand on the sidelines at an NFL game, and they are really missiles flying around that field.
Maybe we need to change or coaches need to change how they're coaching the game. Maybe to coach players a little bit differently, you know, so they don't use their head as a missile. So many guys are taught to use their head as a missile.
Right.
That's such a point of emphasis. I know in youth football, and the good coaches are you wrap up, your head is up, it's not down. You hear stories. You hear stories about youth, you know, teams doing it the wrong way. But man, that. I don't know of too many coaches who teach it that way.
No, I think almost every coach from high school level up is having a practice period every day on form tackling, some sort of a drill on it. And I don't know any coach who says, you know, I want you to stick your head in the guy's chest bone and drive through him or, you know, try to make head-to-head contact. Now, maybe you get into New Orleans Saints locker room and, you know, you've got something a little bit different, but I just think that the speed and the strength of the athlete now has evolved.
Yeah.
You go back to the 60s when we talk about the Baltimore Colts. You remember what those guys were like? A lot of them were doughy guys. They're just kind of there, you know. And you get a big guy, then he weighed 250 pounds.
Yep.
Now you get 300-pound guys, and they're running like linebackers.
Although I still think Lester Hayes would destroy people in today's game.
the game has really changed a lot since those 50s and 60s days. Now to the 70s and 80s, it's been a steady progression of the game, and now it seems like maybe it's reverting back a little bit to that 50s and 60s games on the way the game is played, so they can lessen the stress on injuries.
Well, I go back to George Perlis's first year. In 1983. And he went down to Notre Dame, pulled a big upset down there, and he had Jim Ranella playing nose guard. And he was about 205 pounds, nose guard.
205.
Yep. And what he did, it was great, Joe. He would just kind of dig into the ground, and Notre Dame had a 6'5" center, and they couldn't move him. So he just kind of created a big pile in the middle of the line. Pat Shermer. When he moved to center, and he was starting center at Michigan State, he wasn't 230 when he started. So, you know, you're talking about a guy who was a captain of the Rose Bowl team, and it's really changed. Now, if you're an offensive or defensive, you're an offensive lineman, and you don't weigh 280, I mean, good luck. Go play somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, Travis Jackson, I guess, like 265 at one point, but he'll get there if he's not there already. He'll at least get to that 280 point at the center position. You're right, that's about the cap.
Yeah, now, amazing. The game today is all the guys have to, you know, the strength training is such a key part, a component if you're going to be a football player. I mean, you come in as a freshman, you know you can't play as a freshman. Maybe only a few receivers can really play legitimately at freshman. But you have to do a lot more in the weight room today to get you ready to play for the next 2 or 3 years. You know, if you're good enough, you might leave after 3 years. But, you know, when we say that you have to do more to get ready, is this really good for football? Is it good for players? I mean, to spend so much time in the weight room, we know they spend an incredible amount of time lifting weights.
Why do they spend that time in the weight room?
Because they got to get ready to play.
Because it makes them better, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, what's the goal of the game? What does Herm Edwards say?
Win.
You play the game to win, right? Yep. That's what it's all about. That's why they're out there. They're not spending that amount of money in a major college football program running around to lose. They're playing to win. That's their report card.
I mean, look, you get to this level with the money involved. It's just like, look at the facilities on this campus and other places. It's the same thing. Everyone's trying to find an edge. And I'm sure you go back to maybe even when you were talking about the Perlis era, I'm sure at that point strength training was a big part of it, no question. But like you said, were they lifting weights in the 60s? Were Duffy's teams, you know, spending all this time off-season training, lifting weights, all this stuff? Maybe some, right? But not much, I think. But it's just – if the other guy's doing it, you have to do it too.
And
hey, when it comes down to it, people lose their jobs out here if they're not winning.
Right? I mean, I can take you back 12 years to the NFL Combine. Did you see the video of Tom Brady? What he looked like at the Combine? I mean, Joe looks better than Tom Brady did at that point, and he was done with 5 years at Michigan. So, I mean, you know, a lot of training now has evolved. Everyone has gotten bigger, faster, stronger. And if you want to compete, you got to do the same thing.
When we look at this Michigan State team coming up for this year, you know, a lot of the things that we've been discussing surrounds the players and how good the players are. But how much do we know about the players, you know, this whole system of, you know, you got to sit on the bench at least for 2 years, and then you might get a chance to play in year three. You know, and of course, you have to really work your butt off to put yourself in a position probably to get a chance to play in like second or third year.
It didn't used to be like that at Michigan State.
No.
It hasn't been long that it's been like that.
No, it really has evolved, and, you know, that's one of the things about Mark D'Antonio's program that's very different, the depth that he's built. But you and I have talked about this, Earl. I mean, let's say your son was coming out of high school and always wanted to run through the tunnel at Michigan Stadium or always wanted to come out at Spartan Stadium, and that had been a dream. Do you want him to play at that level? Maybe they're a bag holder. Maybe they never get on the field. Maybe they're playing against guys who are a level above physically. Or would you rather have them drop down a level and play at the MAC or play at the GLIAC or play at the MIAA? You know, we got a receiver at Michigan State right now, right, from Kalamazoo College, John Jakubik. And, you know, he decided he had to make that leap. He couldn't go through his life and not see what it would be like to play at that level. He had to give it a shot. But for a lot of guys, they probably are playing at a level too high. And that's the coach's job to make that evaluation. They're not going to take guys they don't think can play or can win unless they absolutely have to.
And of course, they do take an incredible amount. They got 20 walk-ons, I believe. Yeah,
put 20. I think it's around
85 scholarships, and 20 walk-ons.
That range.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known some guys when I was a student. A couple guys who came through here. Actually, one was a kicker. He was like the fourth string kicker. But they said, hey, if you can come out here and wake up at 4 a.m. every day and go through this stuff, and you can go out there and take the beating and practice, you know, you can be on the team. I mean, if you want to do it, you can be on the team. But it takes a lot. You have to really want to do that, especially if you're someone who really has no chance of playing. But there are some guys like that on this roster every year, and all these college wrestlers who just like you said, they want the experience, they want to be part of it. But it is a tremendous amount of work and sacrifice. And if you're not physically really able to compete with those guys, you're still going to go out there and take hits from them.
There are some guys who just want to be part of the deal. They want to be part of the program and to say that, hey, they lettered at such and such a place. And if you stick around for the whole deal, you get a letter, right? I mean. That's part of the program. But a lot of guys, I would say the majority of guys, aren't going to come close to realizing their dreams when they come out of high school. What percent of guys who come into college make it in the NFL? What's the percentage now?
1%, basically.
Yeah, 2%, 1%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how many of them ever star? How many of them ever score a touchdown in college? Yeah.
But the problem is they all have that dream of playing. Their dream isn't to end their career at college level. Their dream is to get on to the next level. And we know
Are dreams bad? Are those bad?
It's not a problem to have that dream. You just have to make sure that you, you know,
put a dice of realism in there.
Yeah, and go to school and do that part of it too. Right?
I think that's a really important thing, what Joe said. You know, you have to approach it. What would your life be like if you couldn't play, if this was your last day of football? You know, would you be ready? Some guys that aren't ready. Some guys who play in the NFL when it ends aren't ready. They talk about that with Junior Seau too. But you have to make a decision. Football is not a lifelong sport. You know, at best, maybe you play till you're 35. Well, what do you do for the next 35 years?
Yes.
And most guys don't play till they're 25. So let's say you play college football. You know, Dick Vitale talks about using the game and not letting the game use you. And I think that's what most athletes have to be aware of. And that's one thing that coaches need to do a good job of. They need to have an awareness drilled into these guys that their academics are important, that they're not majoring in eligibility, that they have to have a skill, that they have to have a academic preparedness, because people forget who you are when you come out of college, unless right. You've been a megastar. You know, you say, well, yeah, I played a guard on a team that was 6-7. Well, good for you. You know, get in line with all the other people looking for a job. But if you use that experience and you network and you get a degree that you would not otherwise have gotten, then it's a great opportunity.
And this is honestly, I have a little bit of a problem, and I know it's not just here, but, you know, the new football center, the NFL wall. And I understand, and you see it at Breslin, and you see it at other colleges too, selling. Come here, you can go to the pros. I understand why you do it, and you want to celebrate the guys who have done it. But I almost feel like sometimes it is a little bit of a skewed message. I really do. Mm-hmm. Because I understand, too, they have people speak to them about just what you said. I mean, they talk to the guys. Hey, yeah. In fact, I think it was Josh Thornhill at one point said, you know, because he had a brief time in the NFL, and you know, I think he had the guys raise who here thinks you're going to play in the NFL? And basically the entire room, the entire team raises hands. You know, it's well, a couple of you will, you know? So I know they try to do that, but I really don't like this trend the last few years of colleges really, really going out of their way to sell the pro sports dream. It just bothers me a little bit because it really is. Most of those guys on that list, or a lot of them, had about a year. And so maybe you make a little bit of money, but you better have your degree. You better be ready for a life, you know. And I think, like you said, use the game. Hey, Jonelle Sandeek, for example, went in the NFL, played a couple of years, made a nice chunk of change. He's set. You know, he has a nice savings, and now he's going into, you know, teaching and coaching, and that's great. That's how you do it. You know, you get your degree, you get prepared for life, but too many guys just look at it as
they blow all the money and they get out, and all they've got is a bunch of injuries.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at why that happens, obviously, because it works in recruiting. I mean, what do you think Kentucky's big sales pitch is in basketball?
Yep, get to the NBA.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that John Calipari had the greatest day in the history of this program was when those guys all went in the first round, which angered a lot of Kentucky fans. It was good to see some of them actually got angry at it. But it's amazing. That's, you know, come here and you go to the NBA. The thing is, those guys could go play at LCC and they'd be in the NBA the next year, but they don't seem to get that.
The most successful college programs, let's just talk about the Big Ten. Michigan State's been very successful. How many pro basketball players have they had recently? Not a lot. Nope. Not in a while.
They haven't had a first-round pick since 06.
Yeah. You talk about Purdue, other than Glenn Robinson. They haven't had a lot of guys go into the pros. They had Johnson and Moore, 2 years ago, but they haven't had a lot. Wisconsin, they've had a couple. But those programs have been extremely successful. And you know what? It hurts them. They have to battle that every time they go out and recruit because it's, look, all these guys got their degrees. question always comes back, yeah, how many have made the pros? Because that's what kids want to do. Yeah.
And again, I don't think it's a bad dream. It's fine to have that as a dream. It's just that you have to get your other stuff. And basketball is different, too. Like, you know, Matt Trannon's something I always felt strongly about, and I still do. He was advised that he should go into football because he's big and he's fast. But we saw him play. The guy was a basketball player. Yeah. He was good at basketball. He that was his sport. Football is not a sport. He wasn't a football player. He's
right.
Matt Trannon, to me, you know, he had a brief little stint in the NFL. That guy could have gone to Europe for 10, 12 years and set himself up for life playing basketball. I really believe that. If he would have focused strictly on basketball.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's easy to look back and second guess things like that. But I think there's a difference in those two sports, though, because you can make money and play a lot longer in the sport of basketball than you can in football.
You look at football and the guys who have left. And, Earl, some guys get it right away. They understand what the deal is. They see the whole picture. They know that football is going to end, and they get prepared. Some guys, it comes to them later. Yeah. Ronaldo Hill graduated with Ray Weathers a couple weeks ago. They were both in the same major. They were standing there. And here's a guy who's played in the league for 10 years.
Yep.
Some guys would never get it. I mean, you could lead them to water. You do anything you want to do. They don't care.
Well,
they,
this is the question that I know we're dancing around, but we haven't said much about it. Should colleges pay players? Should colleges play guys or give them some kind of stipend? Or do you think that scholarship is enough? Or should the colleges do more? Should they pay players?
Pay them in a salary structure?
Yes.
No. I think there should be enhancements made. I think there should be allowances for parents to go to bowl games, it's things like that, that they're bringing in the money. They're basically the labor force for an industry. Frankly, college football and basketball, it's a major industry.
So and it's free labor.
Yes, absolutely.
It's free labor, yes.
So I think that there needs to be more done. And I think that, you can look at what the value of a college education is. It can be $1 million for most people. It can be zero if you don't use it. The question is, how do you get people to use it? How do you get that light to come on? Do I think that you should ever have an open bidding system the way some people want? No, I don't think. I think it would destroy the college game. You would just have the schools that have the most money would pay the most for players. And, I think it distorts what the collegiate model is. And if you want to watch your pros, go watch your pros.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think – Like Jack said, I think that, you know, they're talking about these stipends, a little more money. I think that's fine, but I think it has to be uniform. I think there's got to be a way, to me, to separate the revenue sports if you want to really get into something, and that's tricky. That's very tricky. I mean, we got the anniversary of Title IX right now, but it's just not the same thing. It just isn't. So. You know, there's talk of maybe the football, men's basketball should be categorized differently or considered differently. But I agree. I mean, there are pro sports. College sports is becoming more and more like pro sports in a lot of different ways.
It's the minor league for the pros.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, it is. But you know what? You lose everything if you don't still have the college model, the tradition, the fight song, the cheerleaders, and amateur athletes. It's going to be interesting, but you know, some guys, there are grants. Some guys get the Pell grants, and that actually gives you a pretty good chunk of money every semester to handle things. I mean, based on need. So it's, I don't know. I think sometimes there's some misconceptions out there about how bad off these guys are.
You know, we all listen to Chris Webber talk about not being able to afford a pizza or whatever that was. Kind of funny now, but. I think that most of those guys have access to as much money as a regular student. Now, do they have as much money as their contribution to the university would dictate that they should have? If you look at it strictly as your value should equal your income, then every teacher in America is underpaid.
Exactly. And journalist.
Especially.
And sports journalist, of course.
Sports talk show hosts are, you know. So I don't know that you can say, well, this person is worth this much because they bring in this much to the company, the corporate structure. You know, who gets paid the most? Well, the CEO.
Yep.
Well, who does the most? A lot of times it isn't the CEO.
Right.
Absolutely.
So.
It's funny, we were talking about this too. And then you think of a guy like a Steve Smith who, you know, was here, got his degree, was an NBA All-Star, and comes back and gives, you know, millions back to this place to help. I mean, you know, so talk about some guys get it. I mean, you know, that's quite a statement when we're talking about, you know, I deserve this, I deserve that.
So I guess in conclusion, what do we need to do more of? Should we basically help these young men get it in college, or teach them more about getting it and use their get their degree, and then you know put that to some good use? Do they just need more education?
I think everybody needs more education, and I think a lot of schools, a lot of programs, really do make an honest effort. They try. But you got a 17 or 18 year old kid, and he's not listening. He doesn't care about that. He's going to be a star. He's going to be on television. He's going to get the Mega Million Dollar deal. And, yeah, okay, what you're saying, that's fine for that guy, but not for this guy. So I don't know how you get through. I know that it's something that every athletic department and every coach, they don't want to see their guys out of school 5 years later and they're destitute. You know, they don't want that. But how can they change it? What can they do better?
Yeah, you know, I think Michigan State, you know, again, I can't speak to other places, but from what I've seen here, I think Michigan State does the right things. I think they really value the education. They really push it. And they, I mean, you look at a guy like Adrian Payne, you know, when he came in, I wouldn't have said necessarily that, you know, I would have looked at him and said, well, maybe he is a risk. I don't know. But look at him. He was their student athlete of the year last year. So,
he looks different with those glasses, doesn't he?
Is that the key? Is that the key, Earl?
Yep.
Look at Earl. Look what the glasses did for him.
You know, I think the Big Ten, though, if you look around the Big Ten, I think most Big Ten athletic departments really do it the right way. I mean, frankly, I don't want to rip on the SEC, but if you want to look at a place that's become just the pros, and I feel like not a lot of value on some of the things that really matter, I think a lot of that's in the SEC. I really do. And maybe I just have some misconceptions being far away and I'm biased, but I don't know. You look at those athletic departments, those that have 16 sports because that's the absolute minimum you can carry. And, you know, it's a little bit different. I think the Big Ten, for the most part, most of these athletic departments try to do it the right way, but you're not going to reach every kid.
And what do most fans want? They want to win championships.
That's it.
And who played for the national championship? Two teams from the SEC.
Yep, and
bottom line.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, fans always want that. Maybe we should do more of educating the fans. Maybe that's the part.
That's your job.
Yeah, you go do that. Get on the internet right now and start.
Yeah, maybe we just need to do more as far as letting them know, more about college football. Because with all the calls that I get and such, everybody just looking at the one thing, winning games. They don't look at hardly anything else, but they always look at winning games.
That will not change.
Yeah, I think that's basically the nature of sports and being a fan, right?
Yeah.
And without fans, none of us have jobs.
Yep. Well, guys, I want to thank you for being with me today. I want to thank Joe Rexroad from the Lansing State Journal and Jack Ebling from the Greater Lansing Sports Magazine. I want to thank you all for listening today, and we'll have a live show coming up for you tomorrow. You've been listening to us here on AM 870 WKAR. Thanks again, Greater Lansing Sport Magazine editor Jack Ebling and Lansing State Journal reporter Joe Rexroad. And we'll be back tomorrow with a live program. We also want to thank Harold Beer for engineering our program today and getting this all on for us today. And we'll be back to you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.